present Kenneth Williams, Clement Freud, Peter Jones and Patrick Moore in just a minute. And as the minute waltz fades away, here to tell you about it is our chairman, Nicholas Parsons.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to Just a Minute. And as you've just heard, we welcome back this week Patrick Moore after some absence and his success on his first visit to play the game in our guest chair with our three regular competitors. And once again, I will ask them if they can speak for just a minute on some subject that I will give them without hesitation, without repetition, and without deviating from the subject. And the first subject that Ian Messiter has thought of is one obviously specially for Patrick. It's a long one. It's called The Fourth Earl Ross, to say nothing of his 42-inch reflector. Maybe Patrick can enlighten us, but will you tell us something about that in just a minute, Patrick, starting now?
The Fourth Earl Ross, to say nothing of his 42-inch reflector. I assume from the wording of the question that I am to say nothing about his 42-inch reflector. And this, in fact, is just as well, for the simple reason he did not have a 42-inch reflector. He never attempted to make anything of the kind. He was, of course, an astronomer. He lived in Ireland. His mother was a most remarkable woman, a pioneer in photography. And when the Earl decided to make a hobby of looking at the sky, he elected to build a major instrument, so to do. But, of course, he was, above all, a morphologist.
Clement Freud, challenge.
Repetition of course.
You have a correct challenge, and you have 32 seconds to talk about the fourth Earl Ross, to say nothing of his 42-inch reflector, starting now.
I'm not going to say anything about his 42-inch reflector, but I will talk about the Earl of Ross, because as a title, it has the extreme rarity of being able to be passed on the female side as well as that of the male. And the Countess Ross, who in fact does a great deal of good, opening exhibitions, picture shows, and in fact being a patroness.
Peter Jones.
A repetition of in fact. You said in fact earlier on.
That is perfectly correct, Peter. You now have 4 seconds, no, 3.5, to talk about the fourth Earl Ross, to say nothing of his 42-inch reflector. In fact, you could just say spin it out in 3.5 seconds if you wanted to, starting now.
He was a dab hand with a telescope, and he used to wield this instrument.
As this reflector puzzles me, Patrick, can you tell us, did he invent a reflector with...
No, the third Earl of Ross made a giant 72-inch reflector, the largest in the world,
competed
in 1845, and it remained the largest until 1970.
Right, we move on to the next subject. Oh, yes, at the end of that round, let me tell you, because whoever's speaking when the whistle goes gets an extra point, and it was Peter Jones, he has 2, Clement Freud has 1, and it's Kenneth Williams' turn to begin. Kenneth, the subject is When It's My Go, and it's your go now, and there's just a minute, starting now.
When it is my go, I should be allowed to get underway properly and not be interfered with by pygmy-like minutiae and rubbish from other people. I should be given the opportunity to express chivalry and generosity of middle age, because youth is always unkind and shouts out, "Get your gas bag!" and rudeness, whereas I, used to the cloister world or groves of academes, they're sometimes called, should proceed evenly, calmly through life on some vast panoply of silken gowns and beauteous noises. No ugly chants, no discord should interrupt. Oh, I realize I'm being sent up wrong. They've all just decided. They just sat there with no intention of pressing.
We were absolutely mesmerised. And the audience were enthralled.
I could see what they were doing. Yeah, give her enough rope, you'll hang yourself.
Well, you never hung yourself with repetition, deviation or hesitation. You kept going with your subject for full 60 seconds till the whistle went. So you get 1 point for when the whistle goes.
Oh,
and
I'm
a
in
bonus.
The lead. I'm in the lead.
Yes, with Peter Jones.
Oh, I see.
You have 2 points for keeping going to the whistle. Peter, it's your turn to begin. The subject is What Makes Me Laugh. Would you tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now?
Well, things like, have you ever had this before? Yes, doctor. Well, you've got it again. That's the kind of thing that amuses me. And do you serve crabs here? Sit down, we serve anybody.
Clement Freud is challenged.
Repetition of serve.
Oh, what a pity.
It's brilliant. It's lovely.
That's rotten, isn't it? But still, it's a correct challenge, so Clement Troy gets the subject. And there are 47 seconds on What Makes Me Laugh, Clement, starting now.
A man who was walking down a street and saw an alarm clock in a shop window and went in and finally said to the man who appeared...
Patrick, repetition of man.
Oh, yes. Man walked down the street and another man appeared.
It's a different man.
Patrick, we never... Patrick, we never got his story about what made him laugh, but we might hear what does make you laugh, because there are 38 seconds left, starting now.
What makes me laugh? Well, of course, the amazing witticisms of the members of the panel invariably do so, but I have found that there's one particular feature of all stories that make me laugh, and that is that they must be funny. Now, this may sound a truism, and of course it is, but if a story...
Clement Freud.
The repetition of course.
Yes, I'm afraid you have to watch that, Patrick, especially the speed at which you go. What makes me laugh, Clement? There are 24 seconds left, starting now.
Do you do canine vasectomies? And the chap in the emporium said, yes, I do, to which this customer replied, why on earth do you have a timepiece where I saw it from the pavement? And he said, what else would you expect me to have there? Has always made me laugh a lot because I thought it was one of the funniest stories, which presumably did nothing at all for the audience. But then we only have 20...
Well, maybe a different house. It would go like a bomb, Clement. You were speaking when the whistle went. You gained an extra point, and so you've just increased your lead now. And will you begin the next round? The subject, phonophobia. Will you tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now?
Phonophobia is presumably a fear of loud noises, but could equally be fright of amplification.
Patrick Moore.
Hesitation, I think.
No, I don't think so. In comparison with your speed, yes, but in comparison with his speed, no. Clement, 52 seconds left. Phonophobia starting now.
For instance, if Patrick Moore bellowed into one's ear, a phonophobic would go straight to the nearest hospital and ask for internment or at least temporary admission, which is the sort of thing that this disease has. In latter-day times, phonophobia is more...
Peter Jones.
It's not a disease.
No, it's a phobia. It can't be a disease. I quite agree. Good challenge. 33 seconds, Peter, on phonophobia starting now.
Well, I don't think Patrick Moore would go up and bellow in somebody's ear. He's got much too good manners for that. He'd probably...
Kenneth Williams, challenge.
Deviation. The subject's phonophobia, not what you imagine Patrick is going to go about doing.
Yes, I consider that deviation. He didn't start on the subject. He started on Patrick Moore. Not literally, you understand. Yeah. There are 26 and a half seconds, phonophobia, with you, Kenneth, starting now.
No one would suffer from this, in my knowledge. They went round with loads of stuff in their ear holes, you know, wax and cotton wool. And then, of course, all the chances of you getting struck by it are minimised immediately. Or could have headphones. They're very useful. A lot of people tell me they use them in laboratories. They have definitely all outside noise. You don't feel a thing. It's like into another world. Cotton wool, it rises with aerial heights.
Patrick Moore.
Deviation. I think he's talking Venusian.
That's a good attempt, Patrick. We'll give you a bonus for a good challenge, and Kenneth won for an incorrect challenge. 3 seconds left, Kenneth. Phonophobia starting now.
And the bloke rushed into the pub and said, mine's a light, and the barmaid poured a bucket of cold water all over him. And I think that's a very funny thing.
Kenneth Williams was then speaking when the whistle went. He gained that extra point, and he's now equal in the lead with Clement Freud. They both have 5 points apiece. Patrick, will you begin the next round, please? The subject, Beetlejuice. 60 seconds, starting now.
Beetlejuice. Now, this could be one of several things. It could, in fact...
Kenneth Williams.
He's deliberately impersonating Clement Freud.
What is your challenge, then?
Well, it's not one, really, is it?
So all you did was to interrupt his flow, a thing you get so cross about. He gets a point for that. He continues on Beetlejuice with 53 seconds left, starting now.
It might well be a problem of entomology, and this has been suggested time again and very often in the past, and no doubt...
Clement Freud.
He's deliberately not Imitating Clement Freud now, which is deviation.
I don't think that he was deliberately not, because he's not an impersonator. An incorrect...
No, you can say that again.
One of the most individual personalities we know. Patrick, you have 44 seconds on Beetlejuice, starting now.
Beetlejuice might easily be juice coming out of a beetle. And if this is done so, then undoubtedly there will be severe repercussions in all kinds of scientific implements. On the other hand, it could also be a star. And there is a body in the sky, and where else could it be, which is very often called Betelgeuse, and it is, in fact, in the constellation of Orion. And I must be very careful not to repeat myself as I've done in the past, because this is a very serious topic indeed. This particular world is huge. It is truly vast. Just imagine what would happen if you got into a jet, or for that matter, some other kind of aircraft, and there are plenty around these days, and you attempted to make a complete circumnavigation of this sphere. How long would it take?
Kenneth Williams, back with you. Percy Harrison Fawcett. That's whom Ian Messiter has asked you to talk about in just a minute, starting now.
As far as I know, he was a colonel who disappeared in near the Zwinge River, and he also took with him the son and a friend, Rimmel, I think it was, a book by Cummings, The Fate of Colonel Fawcett, does deal with this.
Patrick Moore.
Hesitation,
yes, a full stop, wasn't it? Patrick, 44 seconds are left for you to tell us something about Percy Harrison Fawcett, starting now.
Percy Harrison Fawcett, otherwise Colonel, was not a man whom I personally knew. I have obviously heard of him, and I have the greatest admiration for him, because, as we've heard many times and often, he disappeared up the Zingu River. And if you ask me where that is, I am ashamed to say that without consulting my geographical map, and that is the only kind of chart I would care to look at under these conditions, I really cannot tell you. Percy Harrison Fawcett, as I have said before...
Clement Freud.
Repetition.
Of what?
Said it before.
Yes.
I am allowed, surely, to repeat the subject name. And I said,
yes,
Percy
you
Harrison
did,
Fawcett.
But you actually said, as I have said before, before.
I have said before.
Yes.
I understand.
So there are 13 seconds for Percy Harrison Fawcett with you, Clement, starting now.
Percy Harrison Fawcett, as I haven't said as yet. Adam.
Patrick Moore.
If you haven't said it before, what is the point of saying it now? I claim TV.
So what is your challenge?
A deviation.
Deviation. It's incorrect. Clement, you have a point. You have 7 seconds on Percy Harrison Fawcett, starting now.
Was an army officer between the rank of major and full colonel and was lost on the Zingu River, which is in South America. The audience will never know about him now, will they?
Well, I'll tell them. It was in 1925, for those who are interested. Anyway, Patrick Moore, your turn to begin. The subject is optics. That's what Ian Messiter's thought of, and you have 60 seconds to talk about it, Patrick, starting now.
Optics are the study of the eyes, and this is a most important branch of science, because in the modern world of technology, what is more important...
Patrick Moore.
I just realized I repeated important. I've challenged myself.
He can obviously think as quick as he can speak. It's a correct challenge, Patrick, so you get a point for that. And you keep the subject as well. And you have 51 seconds on optics, starting now.
Telescopes, microscopes, many other kinds of instruments, all these are branches of optics. And when you consider them individually or collectively, then you realize how much they do for common people, such as ourselves and others who inhabit...
Kenneth Williams.
Deviation. Common people such as ourselves? And he looked right at me.
Because you're the commonest of them all. So what is your challenge?
A deviation. I'm not common.
Well... shall I put it to the audience? Now, if you think that Kenneth is common, will you please cheer for him? But if you think Patrick is correct, that were all common, then would you boo for Patrick and all do it together now?
Boo.
The boos are a habit, so we're all common, Patrick, and optics is still with you, and there are 36 seconds left starting now.
Optics began centuries ago in the Greek period. The first chart was made by a man whose name was Aristophanes. He was a great writer. He was also a great purveyor of what we now
call
popularization.
Repetition of great.
Yes, he was too great. Optics is with you, Clement, and there are 25 seconds left starting now.
When I did optics at school, one of the most extraordinary manifestations was the prism, which was ever and anon produced by the master in charge of the subject, and rays of light were thrown at it and reflected or refracted out.
Patrick Moore.
Deviation. Which does he mean, reflected or refracted?
Both.
You mean both?
He said they were reflected or refracted.
If he inferred it was the same time, then he is wrong. If he didn't, then he is right.
He did not infer it was the same time, is what I said, Patrick.
Then he is right.
Then he's right. Thank you very much, Patrick.
You see, I object because Patrick Moore is making use of inside information, which is...
Well, it's failed him here.
It has?
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm pleased to hear it.
That's so nice of you, Peter.
Clement Freud has got a point. There are 2 seconds for you to continue on optics, starting now.
There is a time in the affairs of man which...
Well, Clement Freud has increased his lead at the end of that round. And Kenneth Williams, your turn to begin. The subject, murder. You've mentioned that quite a few times in just a minute. Will you tell us something about it now in 60 seconds, starting now?
Little did she know, as she trod the gravel path on that fateful night in 1812, that she was to be the object of derision in the entire neighbourhood when it appeared in the local press that she'd taken the chemical off the flypaper, dissolved it in the bathwater, and put it in his soup. When she was arrested the following day, they desperately tried in all the ways they knew. A blue bottle is buzzing round me and ruining my concentration. But they could not get her off. And so the moment arrived when the judge, placing the black cap upon his head, pronounced the appalling words. Was there to be an 11th hour reprieve? Was the veritable Bernardo to rush in and say, no! Save the poor thing! Never.
Clever, Kenneth, I'm sorry, before the judge pronounced sentence, Clement Freud challenged.
Those were not appalling words. But perhaps they got more.
But if you were in the dock, if you were in the dock, there would be appalling words.
What he just said?
Yes.
Oh.
Kenneth, you have 2 seconds to continue on murder, starting now.
It is only committed when people are not in their right mind.
So, Kenneth worked very hard, but only got 2 points in that round. But he's equal in second place with Patrick Moore, still behind our leader, Clement Freud. And it's Peter Jones' turn to begin. The subject, detection. Following murder, detection. Just a minute to talk about it, starting now.
A fascinating subject, and one that has gripped the imagination of some of the best thriller writers of the last 2 centuries. For instance, I can recall a fascinating account.
Patrick Moore.
Repetition. He said, I don't mean repetition. I mean hesitation.
What does he mean?
I mean hesitation.
Would you like to go outside for a few minutes and think it over? Calm yourself.
Patrick, you have the correct challenge. You have 47 seconds to talk about detection, starting now.
Detection is a very old science, and I think we can call it that. It goes back for centuries. It started, I think, in the 14th decade, and this goes back now a very long way indeed. Detectives are, I feel, some of the most valuable people whom we encounter in our modern lives. They are of various kinds. Some are small, rat-like people with faces like pigs who crawl around doing their best to uncover any trace of dirt, any...
Clement Freud challenge.
Hesitation.
Peter, Clement Freud, you have... Clement has a correct challenge, and you have 18 seconds left for detection, starting now.
Some of my favorite heroes of detection are those depicted by Agatha Christie and Dorothy L. Sayers, Hercule Poirot, which means...
Yeah. And what is the score now? Oh, well, Clement has increased his lead at the end of that round, and it's his turn to begin the next round. The subject is Diamond Lil. Would you talk about her for just a minute? In just a minute, starting now.
Now, Diamond Lil, in fact, was a character who appeared in the poems of Robert Service, a 19th century poet who wrote predominantly about the new frozen north, which was beginning to thaw above the 49th parallel, where the men who went to the Yukon to make their fortunes lusted
for
women.
Peter Jones was challenged.
He didn't write about Diamond Lil.
Yes, he's mixing him up with Eskimo Nil. That's what he's doing.
That's it. Exactly. Yes.
Diamond Lil was a character
that...
It
took you a long time, didn't it?
No, it took them a long time to make out that my Diamond Lil was a character that Mae West immortalised. And Robert
Service...
Well,
I kept looking at you and asking you if it was true or not, but you wouldn't answer.
I thought you said, are you Diamond Lil?
He never calls you Lil, does he?
No. No, but I call him Nil. Right, let's get back to just a minute. Diamond Lil was a correct challenge from Peter Jones, and he now has 18 seconds to talk about her, starting now.
With those enormous hats and the pinched-in waist and the pushed-up bust and the diamonds and other jewellery that hung from every...
Kenneth Williams.
She didn't have any diamonds. She had paste.
But she had diamonds somewhere, because the point was...
That's the whole point. She hadn't, you great fool. She was broke. That's why, a fool. Don't you know about Diamond Lil?
No, but her great hobby and desire was to acquire diamonds.
Oh, I see. Yes,
that was why she was known as Diamond Lil.
But they weren't hanging from everywhere.
No, not everywhere. That would have been impossible. Peter.
Not with paste, it wouldn't.
I think we'll continue with just a minute. Diamond Lil is the subject. There are 9 seconds left. We're still with you, Peter Jones, starting now.
Sheer silk stockings with most elaborate garters.
This is getting disgusting. I don't want to... It's supposed to be a family show. We don't want to hear about all this underwear and lingerie. It's getting me terribly worked up. Deviation.
Why?
Deviation.
It's deviation when you get worked up, is it?
Yes.
Well, we'll watch out. And leave the subject with Peter Jones, who has 5 seconds to continue on Diamond Lil, starting now.
At one end, high-heeled shoes.
Patrick Moore.
You couldn't have high-heeled shoes at both ends.
Well, that's why I say at one end, and I'm going to tell you what she had at the other end.
Luckily, you won't have time.
Peter, a wrong challenge. You have another 3 seconds on Diamond Lil, starting now.
Parted lips full of promise and eyes that blink like...
Well, I can remember occasion when Peter Jones took over a subject and he was lying in fourth place and with tremendous style and panache leapt forward into the lead. He didn't achieve it this time. He did move into second place, which was quite an achievement in one round. I'm mentioning this because I have to give you the final score because we have to wind up the game. Kenneth Williams was just in fourth place, only 1 point behind Patrick Moore, and he was only 1 point behind Peter Jones, who I say leapt forward, but they were all a few points behind our leader, who once again is Clement Freud. Hope that you have enjoyed listening to Just a Minute. From all of us here, goodbye.
The chairman of Just a Minute was Nicholas Parsons. The program was devised by Ian Messiter and produced by John Lloyd.